Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. Not CEOs, not big flashy executives, not vendors. We're talking to the people who are actually doing the work, the ones leading teams, the ones in the trenches, grinding it out every single day. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. I'm here today with Richard DeVere. He is the Director of Revenue Operations at Jet, and I'm so excited to talk to Richard. I follow Richard on LinkedIn. He's been in the revenue operations industry for quite some time and has lots of experience. So, Richard, thank you for joining me today. Please, please, please tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Sandy. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on this episode. Hi, everyone. My name is Richard. For the past 25 years, I've been working in the tech industry, of which 20 years in the internet space. I have been fortunate to have worked at fast-paced companies disrupting industries, whether that would be payments, online commerce, or HR tech. And since the last 5 years, I've been working in the revenue operations space as the Director of Revenue Operations Corporate Solutions at JustEatTakeaway.com, a food delivery company and a global player.
I love it. And you said JustEatTakeaway.com very well. And I know you said, hey, why don't you say Jet before we get started? But I think it's very fascinating what you guys are doing and how you're operationalizing everything over at Jet. So thanks for the background there. Tell me a little bit about how you got started in revenue operations.
Well, like throughout my career, which originates from a marketing background. I've been working both in the B2B space as well as the B2C space. But as a B2B marketer, I was working very closely with sales teams and sales operations teams. And through that exposure, I really got an interest in the mechanics behind a sales machine and how sales operations work. So when I joined JustEatTakeaway.com and was given the task to help launch the new B2B proposition across the markets that we operate in, I got interested in this whole revenue operations space. Now, being a former employee of LinkedIn, I also saw that revenue operations was one of the fastest growing functions at fast growing companies. So that really got my interest. So by combining these two, basically in my last 5 years, I made the switch to revenue operations and expanded my role throughout the past 5 years. I'm currently am doing that.
So, tell me about this, you know, making the switch over to revenue operations and, or, you know, kind of getting into it. What skills did you find helped you the most in making that transition and transformation?
Well, I think as a marketer, where I worked at data-driven companies in SaaS B2B, that data-driven interest and that data-driven approach to problems has really helped me make that transition, as well as a former marketer to look at scale and doing things mm-hmm. at scale. That has also really helped me. And then third, the customer centricity, whether those are internal customers like yourself, sales teams or your other stakeholders or the end customer that you serve, that third element has also helped me transition into revenue operations. And I think a combination of being data driven, having a business acumen, but also looking at problems in a creative manner, but with the intent for it to scale on a much larger scale, as well as making it cost efficient, that has really helped me so far in revenue operations so far.
It's so interesting because I talk to so many revenue operations leaders and contributors in the space, and everybody gets there differently, you know. Some people come from the sales side, from, you know, the analytics side, the marketing side. I mean, I've even heard of people, you know, coming out of law and going into revenue operations. So it's very interesting, I find. And that's what's so neat, I think, about the role is it is emerging, it is evolving. You know, I was doing things that are, you know, quote, revenue operations today that, you know, back in the day really were just, you know, you got to get shit done, you know? Yeah. And so it's really nice that it's, you know, kind of evolved into what it is, into a really strategic role in organizations.
I've been lucky in that sense, because when I joined Jet 5 years ago, it followed a acquisition that the company made. And we were tasked to build out this new B2B proposition. And initially, I came on board as a consultant to help with marketing. But throughout that first couple of months, where I, because of my background, I was able to add value on different other aspects, as we were building out that business, that then sort of evolved into like doing the things that are now currently labeled as RevOps, but I didn't recognize them as such, in the beginning, or they weren't labeled, as such in the beginning. But then, after a while, when, I was asked, hey, do you want to come on board as a full-time employee? That was when everything started to click. And I decided, yes, this is revenue operations, what I'm doing. So that should be my role. And ever since that has become my role.
I love it. I love it. And it makes so much sense, because a lot of what I hear you talk about is really the focus on the customer, the full customer journey, the bow tie. And I think that's just really important for not just RevOps contributors and leaders, but people who are running the business. You know, it ultimately is about the customer, how the customer engages with your organization throughout their life cycle. So I think that's a good tee up for our topic, where, you know, I know you have this QBR cadence that you recently wrote about, and, you know, you're just really passionate about supporting, you know, the end-to-end customer process. So I'd love to hear what you're doing around QBR cadences.
Maybe just to double click on the whole bow tie model. Mm-hmm. Like, we adopted the bow tie model, especially because of our business model. Our business model is usage based. So only when people, and maybe I should take two steps back by explaining what it is that we actually do. Like, our B2B proposition evolves around giving companies the ability to give an allowance to their employees, which they can then use either online or through a payment card at any food and beverage store, also outside of our platform. So, and given that we have a usage-based pricing model, our goal is to maximize usage of that given allowance. And in that sense, the whole bow tie model is really fitting to the way we operate, because it's not only about signing up a company who then provides an allowance to their employees, but it's also about activating that company and ultimately activating those users to actually make maximum usage of their allowance. Mm-hmm. So there, the whole adoption activation that is so reminiscent of the bow tie model fully applies to us. And at the very beginning, when we started out, we operated very much in silos. We had, across that bow tie model, we had different go-to-market functions, all doing their own priorities. And when we were having business reviews, it didn't create like a holistic story. So that's why we revisited our whole QBR approach. I'm happy to talk about how we approached it.
Yeah. So I just, before we jump into the QBR part, I just want to point out, you know, I think a lot of, when you think of business models, you know, you have your customers, and then they have essentially their customers. And it sounds like, you know, from even an enablement standpoint, you don't not just having to enable your buyers, but their consumers, essentially, right? The consumers of the product that they're providing, and equipping your customer in a, you know, a train the trainer type of way, or what type of support are you providing? And I think it's relatable in a lot of lot of organizations, in not even just that, in that consumption-based model, but a lot of it's just human behavior change, right? That you're really trying to support, so that way you can, at the end of the day, generate revenue, which...
Yeah, you know. Yeah. In our case, it's not so much like the classical B2B model, because that right. we also have where we sell into companies, but it's mm-hmm. B2B2C, because ultimately we also need to reach those employees, and they're mm-hmm. the B2C marketing principles also apply to activate those users right. So that they make maximum usage of their allowance.
Right. There's no revenue recognition if they don't swipe the card.
No. Like as soon as people start enjoying their own favorite, their own food yep. favorite, that's the moment when we can mark revenue.
Well, then tell me a little bit about how you're managing that with your QBR process.
Well, it all started with first defining, okay, what is our North Star? And what are we ultimately driving as a business? And one might say that is revenue, that is gross merchandise volume. But actually, the metric that is closest to that value creation, like we talked about just now, like revenue recognition only happens when people are consuming the food that they bought. It's actually orders per user. That is mm-hmm. the North Star metric. And then by defining, okay, what are the underlying metrics that help drive that North Star metric? Those needed to be defined, as well as it needed to be made clear, how do we calculate those mm-hmm. metrics? Because initially when we started out with QBRs, we had lots of discussions about, okay, how is this measured? What does this metric even mean? How do you define that? According to my report, I actually have different values. So before going into the QBR cadence, we needed to reach alignment on, okay, what are the metrics that we deem to be important? What are their definitions? And how do we measure them? And so that we all have, we speak the same language and we look at the metrics in the same way. So that was really like step one. And then, as is very typical with QBRs, you tend to want to look at every possible KPI out there. Mm-hmm. But by building that KPI tree, starting from that North Star metric, we could identify, okay, what are really the key metrics that we want to look at? And what metrics do we not need to look at to such detail so that we focus on the quality metrics versus trying to cover every possible metric that is out there, especially in a consumption-based business as ours. There are many variables that ultimately drive success, and you can go into a rabbit hole trying to figure out mm-hmm. Each and every one of them. But to keep focused and to make sure that you are driving the right ones, we needed to define, okay, which metrics are we going to include in our QBRs and which ones are less meaningful without ignoring them, but just not giving them a place in the QBR.
So how did you go about determining? So, you know, you obviously could figure out, you know, what are a few key important metrics to track, but how did you go about that internally to align on what those are? Because as you mentioned, there's a lot, but which ones are meaningful? And so can you maybe expand a little bit about how you approach that internally?
Yeah, no. We first started out with like identifying that whole bow tie model. Mm-hmm. And how that would apply to us. And then that identifying, okay, which metric is associated with each step in that bow tie model. Then we created like a pretty exhaustive list of, okay, these are all the KPIs that we could be looking at. Mm-hmm. And then working together with sales and with our insights team to determine, okay, which of these KPIs are mostly correlated? Like how do we build up that KPI tree? Mm-hmm. Which metrics can we actually measure right now properly and can say with confidence that this metric is actually true, because data hygiene, especially when you are building out your business, yeah, that is cumbersome in the very mm-hmm. beginning, that not every metric is as reliable as we would like it to be. So by identifying, okay, these are the metrics that we can that we are confident about, we could shortlist that list. And then by also talking to the sales team to understand, okay, and to the marketing team and to the other people that are part of the go-to-market function, discuss, okay, which are the metrics that we want to include in our QBR. And that then led to a much shorter list of metrics that have now become like a recurring set of metrics that we discussed during the QBR.
I love it. So it sounds like it was very collaborative. How did you, you know, once they kind of put together this QBR and have the metrics, how did you go about enabling that with the teams? Was this something that you built together, or did you just provide the data and then the teams kind of did what they wanted to? Like, how did that end-to-end process go?
Well, it first started within my team, within the revenue operations team, where someone responsible within insights wrote down all those different metrics and created a definition mm-hmm. of it. So, okay, what does new business constitute in our world, for example, and what period do we look at when it comes to a new business? And then writing that down, also showcasing how are these metrics then calculated. And then by having multiple working sessions with our sales leaders to get their buy-in on, okay, these are the metrics that we want to define. This is the logic behind why are we looking at our metrics in this particular way, and how is it going to help us steer the business better? But then also taking on board their feedback and their input, but also what mm-hmm. is it that they need in order to steer their business? So trying to find a balance between, okay, what is relevant at a central level, but what is also relevant at a local level, and how do the two roll up seamlessly to one another? So those were multiple working sessions that needed to take place, but also very much like cutting it up across that bow tie model. So first looking at new business, okay, let's first focus on new business. What are the metrics that really drive that? And let's tackle that first. And once that's signed off, then move on to the next step. So that kind of then ultimately led to, okay, now we have identified all the different metrics, and then look at, okay, how do we enable everyone to have the right reporting mm-hmm. at hand, whether it's, well, we have a BI tool, we also use Salesforce. So how do we then make it easy for our sales leaders to have access to that data on an ongoing basis, so that's not only a metric that appears or surfaces during a QBR, but that it is available at hand. So we created like persona-based dashboards, dependent on the role that someone has within the go-to-market function, to give them a different view of the business with the respective metrics that they then need. And then so giving them those dashboards, giving them those reports, then going into the QBR, really templatizing our entire QBR, whereby my team preps many of the slides beforehand. So making sure that all the slides are coming from the same source, they're calculated in the same way, and they are in line with the definition that we made, in order to alleviate some of that heavy lifting from the local sales teams, so that for them, they can actually start adding the quality input that the data might not say, or just to have their local perspective on those numbers.
So you're actually populating the data into slides in a, you know, usable format. So they're not having to copy and paste from a dashboard into their slide decks with just a report. You're actually making the slides for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think every salesperson is going to want to call you up and go over to your company, because that's pretty awesome. I mean, I think that's a true example of how, when you think about revenue operations, you're also thinking about enablement. I think enablement is a critical piece of it. So you shouldn't just stop at, here's the data, now good luck, you know, put it into your stuff for your customers, but really thinking about how to actually utilize it, something that's meaningful.
Yeah, how can we operationalize it, but also for them to give feedback, right? Like we develop those dashboards, we develop those reports, mm-hmm. and those charts are being generated. But at the same time, yeah, it's an ongoing iteration. We continuously improve it also based on their feedback, but also based on the discussion that is happening within the QBR that we are mm-hmm. Maybe this, like in the very beginning, okay, maybe this particular slide doesn't really reflect the story well enough. And for the next one, for the next session, we will have a slightly different visualization of the situation.
I love it. That's really taking it end to end with your delivery. So you're bringing something strategic that's valuable, but sometimes it's easy for folks to just, check a box. Hey, I gave you your report and now I've moved on to some other things, and you're following it through, you're listening to calls, you're understanding what's working, what's not working, and actually doing something with the feedback, right? Feedback is completely useless if you just sit on it and don't do anything.
No. And then that would then kind of like be counterproductive in terms of collaboration. Like in that sense, we are serving the local markets, but we all have the same goal to get orders per user, get that up in the different markets that we operate in. So having that dynamic and that sense of collaboration, that has really helped to improve our QBRs. Like in the very beginning, it was very much more messy, kind of like challenging the data that was being presented, but also kind of like somewhat finger pointing to the different go-to-market functions. But also that we tried to tackle by having a very fixed flow of, okay, this is what is going to be discussed during the QBR, and where we basically start with the end. So we look at, okay, what has been your target? What has been your target achievement? And then we work our way backwards to, okay, what has really driven that attainment all the way down to leads. So like the leads that are sourced through sales or through marketing only come at the very end of the QBR. Like we're kind of like basically going from the top, we go down to find the underlying drivers.
I love it. And again, you're always tying back to the bow tie. And so if, I think we could probably provide some links and resources for people listening on, where to learn about the bow tie. I know Winning by Design is a great resource for that. So do you have any other recommendations?
No, I think Winning by Design, it has really been the driving force between the for the popularization of that entire concept. So many of that is either through Winning by Design or the people associated to that organization or pavilion that also makes use of it from time to time.
Yeah, I think it's so valuable. I mean, I know people talk about the, the funnel, right? Which is, to me just very incomplete. I mean, it's part of it, right? But, or I think I've seen the hourglass, which is basically the bow tie, standing upright. It's kind of like, it's a different spin on it. But the point of it all for folks listening is just that you're supporting the entire buyer journey and wherever they are at in the process, whether they've just visited your website or, they're referring customers in or potentially churn. So throughout the life cycle of the customer.
Yeah. And that also has really helped in our case that marketing's responsibility doesn't end when supplying a certain amount of leads, but it's really about, okay, how do those leads convert? What value do they generate? But also ultimately, like the employees of those accounts, to what extent can we drive their usage even further? So the job doesn't end once the deal is signed. Like it continues all the way through to make a recurring business out of it.
Time to shine a spotlight on today's sponsor, PandaDoc. If non-compliant quotes are causing escalations and clogging up your deal cycle, well, then it's time you met PandaDoc. PandaDoc is an all-in-one document management solution that simplifies the entire configure price quote process. No matter how complex your catalog is, PandaDoc makes it actually easy for reps to import accurate pricing, product, and service data based on rules you set in advance. This includes discounts, recurring charges, and other deal specifics. Because both you and sales reps have eyes on the same live document, approvals are a snap, enabling reps to push deals to close one ASAP. Make 2025 the year your revenue team gets on the same page and stays there. Visit pandadoc.com/ROA to learn more.
For sure. That's so important to remember on a day-to-day basis, because I think you get hung up on internal challenges. And, you know, I was in a workshop just a couple of days ago with my new teammates, and we were talking about some of the challenges that we were trying to solve, and, you know, restructuring some of the teams. And one of the things that, you know, we were talking about all the people internally that were going to be in these, you know, tiered teams and things like that. And so I walked up to the board and I just wrote the customer in like a circle around it in the middle of the board and said, okay, so now how do we structure these teams around the customer? Because we always really, I think, need to put the customer in the center and remember that, right? Because you kind of get hung up on, well, how does this tool work with this tool? How does this process work with this process? But what ultimately is the downstream impact on the customer? And in cases like yours, the customer's customer, like how does this actually work?
Yeah, no, true. Like in our case, yeah, that couldn't be even truer. Like continuously looking at, okay, how can we drive up the usage, and how can we enable the company when they decide to provide such a announce to their employees? How can we enable them to advocate for it inside their company, and that the HR department, who is providing that benefit, can really put themselves and their employees on a pedestal for providing mm-hmm. that benefit.
Yeah, and I think it's a good reminder for people in any aspect of operations where you're, you know, I look at it as we're working on the business, right? We're not always in most roles of RevOps, you're not the one directly interacting with customers. So I think it's so critical in your company to know the business intimately, really understand. So if you're, because, you know, RevOps, you don't have to have industry experience necessarily to go get a job with a new company. You don't have to really know those type of things that maybe a salesperson might need to know going into a role or somebody else operations. But when you're going into those scenarios at any organization, it is so critical to stay engaged with the business, learn the business, and then to keep up with it. So it sounds like you listen to customer calls, you're, you know, kind of deeply engaged in the business. And I think we just have to really remember that. So anytime you work on the business, not in the business, you have to be really intentional about putting yourself in the business.
Yeah, like, and in our case, like, I think it's also very fortunate the way we are set up as a revenue operations team. Like, within Corporate Solutions, so within the B2B side of JustEatTakeaway.com, we basically have three functions. You have the product and tech team developing the product. You have the different sales teams in the different markets. And then you have my team, Revenue Operations, which encompasses marketing, sales enablement, product marketing, but also like the operations with the with system setup, tooling, and insights. And then third, how do we further strengthen our value proposition, and how can we further strengthen our product portfolio to create even more stickier customers, and at the same time drive up usage? So by positioning yourself as such within the organization, you are both working on the business, like what future value propositions mm-hmm. Do we need to develop, and how do we then support that from a process perspective and from a tooling perspective, but also how do we generate the demand in order to keep on growing and to have a future quarter interest and demand into our product so that we can continue to grow. So that helps us really balance both work inside the business and have that quarter by quarter look, but also that multi-quarter look on, okay, how do we further develop our value proposition?
I love it. And you just answered my next question. I was going to ask you about your organizational structure. So it sounds like you have You have marketing that you're responsible for and product marketing. So can you tell me a little bit, it's a little bit unique in revenue operations. So you have, you know, quite a broad, and maybe it's given your experience and your background in marketing. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more about your, how your team's set up.
Yeah, no, I think that is the dominant reason, that unorthodox way of how I ended up into revenue operations. Like, I started out as a consultant helping with marketing. So that was the first function that I created inside this business unit. And knowing the things that I do about marketing, it was also very logical to keep that function under my in my remit. So my team basically is organized around three pillars. So the first one being creating demand. So that is marketing, account-based marketing, generating demand amongst our ICP for our proposition. It is product marketing, which is going a little bit down funnel to really understand, to really showcase, okay, how does our product offering differentiate from the incumbent solutions? But at the same time, how do we communicate it to our end users, the employees of our clients, to make use of their allowance to the maximum level? And then sales enablement, which is around, okay, how do we help our sales team have the right content, the tooling and training to be as effective and as efficient as possible? The second pillar is around converting that demand. So how do we enable our sales team to convert that interest into actually closed deals and into usage as efficient as possible? So looking at our process, so how do we need to design it? What tweaks do we need to make? But also how do we technically enable that through our CRM system, but also looking at what kind of tools and tech stack do we need to deploy for them to be as effective as possible? And thirdly, the insights, like how can we help our sales team to have the right insights, to focus on the right clients, but also to drive those metrics that I was referring to earlier. And then the third pillar is around cultivating demand. So how do we create stickier customers through that product marketing function that I was talking about? But also, how do we further evolve our product offering and provide even more value to our customers? Like when we started out with an online allowance, which could only be used on one of our platforms. But then later on, developed a payment card, which basically means that you can use that same allowance at any food and beverage store outside of our platform, in store when on the go. But also gift cards is something that we've recently launched. Wow. So it's a pretty wide remit indeed.
Yes, definitely. But it's a true testament to thinking about the bow tie and the way that you do, and also enablement. I think without enablement, it's RevOps is, you know, what do you do with all this information? How do people use it? You know, so I think in people who are listening, who are thinking, well, you know, I don't have enablement, or my enablement leaders don't work with me, or there's not enablement at our company, you know, well, you really need to create it and create that relationship and always be thinking about, you know, how are you going to ultimately execute it? How does it affect the end user? And how do you continue to iterate it?
Yeah, like enablement for us is really critical in driving adoption, but also getting buy-in, like really understanding from our user, which is the field sales team, on, okay, why is this process not working or working, and what do I need in order to be more successful? And right now we are slightly more skewed towards the content side of things because explaining our product to our target audience and helping our sales team to elevate that discussion that they're having, like moving away from us being a tool, but really being part of a benefit strategy and being able to have those conversations with HR leaders or facility directors. Those are strategic consultative selling conversations that they're having. But they also need the right content in order to keep the conversation going. And that's where sales enablement really comes in, but also to drive the adoption of our process, but also driving the ICP and the strategy that we are deploying as a RevOps team.
Well, Richard, this has been a really great conversation, and you know, you just have so much to share, to offer, and I would love to keep going on our conversation. But I would like to see if you can wrap up here by giving the listeners maybe some of your hot tips or something that you always, you know, live by, or a mantra, just some sort of RevOps words of wisdom.
Well, I think one of the things that like personally, I've been taking on improv classes for the past period. Like I've recently finished level two, and okay. Two things that have really helped me in my RevOps journey and helped me, well, also in general, is to have a strong point of view. Now, of course, that point of view can only be strong if it has data supported to by it, but also you need to be passionate or enthusiastic about it, or to be able to convey the sense of urgency of why do you want something to change. So that really helps to evoke a discussion with your stakeholders, which will then ultimately lead to sharper outcomes. And I think a second element that I learned at improv that I would like to give to the listeners is to act with active listening. So really try to listen to seek understanding. Why? What's the question behind the question of your stakeholder? And without like moving away from your standpoint, have a yes and mindset where you are basically acknowledging their perspective and building further on it. So to ultimately get buy-in, because I think ultimately that is what RevOps is about, to align and streamline your revenue engine to accelerate growth.
Ooh, that is strong. That is really strong, Richard. And I really wanted to wrap up with that last word, but you mentioned improv. I'm so intrigued. I love it, because you're about the probably fourth person recently who's told me either they want to do improv or they're doing it. And I did a speaking workshop where the speaker, the leaders were like, hey, you should go do an improv. So I've been thinking about it myself, but that's pretty strong. That's pretty awesome. So level two, man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. No, like level one was about the fundamentals. Level two was about scene building. So how do you build a scene with multiple people? And soon I will continue with level three, which will then be around, okay, how do you build a great character? So, but it has really helped to be comfortable with the uncomfortable, as well as like to think really quickly on your feet, because you have no idea what your scene partner will say. And that you can also apply to business.
That's so awesome. Yeah, for business collaborations, RevOps, man, you know, we need to be collaborators. We need to work with those team partners. We need to understand and anticipate and really put yourself in the other person's shoes. So I love that. So thanks so much for this wealth of knowledge today and some great insights to what you're doing over there at Jet. And I've just really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for joining today.
Thank you very much, Sandy. I enjoyed it as well, and thank you for having me.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.